I invite you to turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3, and we'll begin at the first verse of this chapter and read down to verse 6, which is really what I want to focus on. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1, "Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair or the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of an inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear." May God bless the reading and hearing of His Word. Now, Father Abraham is honored by Jews, Muslims, and Christians alike. But just for the record, there were four mothers of Israel. There was Sarah, Rebecca, Leah, and Rachel. Peter exalts Sarah in this passage and exhorts all Christian women to follow her example. Now, you remember back from chapter 2 and verse 21 that ultimately we are all to be disciples of Jesus, and He left us an example that we should follow in His steps. Ultimately, as Christians, whether male or female, we all follow the example of Christ. But it's interesting that when we drop down a few verses, the mothers, the wives, the females are also given a female example, and they are to follow Mother Sarah. Now, I'm aware of some of the controversies that are embedded in this passage, and I'll deal with them at another time as best I'm able. I realize I could give you a short list of instances when Sarah was mistaken and should not be emulated. And frankly, I can also give you some instances when Father Abraham had a lapse of faith and was less than the example he should have been. But, you know, those are really not appropriate for me to deal with. I'm to deal with the text and what the text says, not what the text leaves out. I'm glad that in God's mercy and grace, that when He's writing our, when He's keeping a record of our lives, that He's able to forgive and overlook some things. And so I'm aware that Jesus was the perfect example. I'm also aware that neither Father Abraham nor Mother Sarah were perfect. But I want to put the emphasis on what Peter is emphasizing, and he does emphasize some positive attributes from Mother Sarah. And so, this morning, as time allows, I want to highlight her beauty, her behavior, and her bravery. Now, it's interesting that Peter makes reference to her beauty. In Genesis chapter 12, we're told that Sarah was beautiful, and because of that, Abraham was afraid that the Egyptians would do away with him so that Pharaoh could have Sarah as a part of his harem. Now, this is one of the instances where Father Abraham failed to show faith. He gave way to his fear. The great man of faith that he was, characteristically so, he failed in this particular situation to live by faith. Again, I want to emphasize to you, one of the reasons I know the Bible is trustworthy is that the writers of the Bible did not expunge out all of these shortcomings. In other words, the Bible is consistent that Abraham is the father of the faithful, but it does not edit out of the record his humanness and those times when he failed. I'm glad the Bible didn't. I'm encouraged to know that he was not absolutely perfect, that he had lapses, but characteristically, he was a man of faith. Now, in that particular instance where he lapsed in his faith in Genesis 12, the emphasis is on the beauty of Sarah. Is that an interesting topic for us to discuss this morning? Women spend $426 billion on cosmetics and beauty products on an annual basis. Now, if I had been a preacher of a previous generation, I would have a perfect platform for some wisecracks. But frankly, I have learned that it would be wise if I didn't make any cracks at this point, because we're talking about something that our society puts such a premium on and creates such high and unrealistic expectations. I think this is fascinating to realize that Sarah was indeed a beautiful woman. Now, there are some women who are beautiful and know it. There are other women who cannot be convinced that they are beautiful because of some of the scars in their past. But let me hurriedly move to Solomon, who knows more about this subject than anyone else. And I'm really trying to suppress a wisecrack there. But he writes in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 22, that a beautiful woman who shows no discretion is like a gold ring in a pig's snout. Now that's funny. I think it was meant to be funny. But what it's implying is that a gold ring is always an object of beauty. That's why we put the premium upon it that we do. But that gold ring, that object of beauty, is wasted on a hog, because the gold does not cease to be beautiful, but it does not improve the looks of the hog. Now, that's a pretty earthly example, but what it is attempting to say is that physical beauty is wasted when it is not accompanied by good taste. Now, I think that's self-explanatory, but if you'll just allow me to kind of give a statement much like Forrest Gump would make, what this is really saying is pretty is as pretty does. And I know you mothers have preached that, and so I'm trying to give you some backup there. Peter is saying that beauty is not based on ornamentation, on extravagance. But a beautiful woman is one who has a gentle and quiet spirit. I was raised in a church that took verse 3 in an absolute sense, and it was against church rules and regulations for women to wear any jewelry. Now, I don't think that's what Peter is trying to imply here. But I think what Peter is saying in verse 4 is that all of the expensive and the most extravagant adornment that you can put on yourself will not make you beautiful if in fact you're acting ugly. Peter is simply saying that true beauty originates from the inside out. But he's not prohibiting outward beauty as well. Again, I want to say that we as a society put so much pressure on women to look a certain way, and often we can be very inconsiderate. But the message is a positive message, that no matter how attractive you are or how unattractive you may think you are, there is something you can do to make yourself more beautiful. And Peter is saying you can adorn yourself by cultivating a gentle and a quiet spirit. Now that immediately sends me to the original words because I want to know what those words mean. If those are the qualities that make one beautiful, then I don't want to guess at what these words mean. The word gentle describes strength without harshness. Now, I really like that description. We're not saying that a wife or a mother is just an easy pushover. No, she is strength. She is strong, but she can be strong without being harsh. Some of us on the other side of the aisle have not learned to do that. You push our button and we'll let you know what we believe, but sometimes we do so in an ugly way. The word for quiet does not mean that she's to be mute or silent or can't speak. Quiet here means that she has a tranquility or a calmness about her, even when there's a storm going on all around her. This is a part of her beauty, is that she can remain in control. That's not a description of weakness. That's a description of strength, isn't it? That a beautiful woman is so strong that she can actually maintain peace, an atmosphere of peace in her house when everything outside her house is upside down. Now, I didn't know Sarah, but this described my mother. You didn't know my father, and I'm not saying anything to cast off on him. I talked with him on the phone yesterday, and we both told each other that we loved each other. But it took us at least 50 years before we could say that to each other. Just not that we hated each other, but just that men didn't ordinarily say that to men. My father was a strong man, but he was a man that could intimidate by the force of his personality, and sometimes I was afraid of him. But when his strength failed, and nobody outside the home would have ever seen that, he was a tough person on the outside. But when he collapsed on the inside, when he was at the end of his rope, it was my mother's quiet strength that knew how to handle him. Now, I'm not trying to raise more questions than I answer, but within the family, there was a common statement that she was the only one who knew how to handle him. But she did know how to handle him in such a way that she gave calmness and security to the rest of us. To take my dad on publicly was to walk into a buzzsaw. But when he failed to win with his buzzsaw approach, Mama was really the strong one who kept everything under control. Now, if that's too personal a reference, then I'll give you my apology. But when I read Peter's words, I read them through that lens, and I realize that when you read Peter's words, you're reading them through the lens of your own experience. And I venture to say that that was the way it was in many, many, many homes. Now, one more thing that I think would be of interest to you. In verse 4, it speaks of an unfading beauty. Do you see that? It says that Sarah has this beautiful character, this gentle and quiet spirit. But it also says that this is a beauty that is unfading. Now, isn't that it? You know, you can't do anything about the clock. But isn't it interesting that if we have this spiritual beauty, it only increases with the passage of time? Now, I can illustrate this, and I will. I hope nobody thinks I'm flirting from the pulpit. But it is quite accurate for me to say that Miss Mita at age 95 is more beautiful than she's ever been. That's what this text means. That you don't lose your beauty if it comes from the inside. Now, we sometimes worry when we take inventory looking in the mirror, just looking at the outside. But do you understand this kind of beauty cannot be taken away from us? Now, that bleeds over to the second point. We've talked not only about a mother's beauty, but now let's talk about her behavior, which in itself is beautiful. But the life of a Christian mother is described in verses 2 when they see her beauty, which is described as pure and reverent. If you're looking at the old King James text, it says that her life is chaste, coupled with fear. What Peter literally is saying is that a Christian wife and mother should be a holy and respectful person. The term fear should not be read as intimidation, because when you drop down to verse 6, one of the last things that is said about Mother Sarah, you are her daughters if you do not give way to fear. So a woman is not someone who is emotionally weak and can be pushed over and is easily intimidated, because verse 6 says that is what she is not. And so in verse 2, I should not read verse 2 in such a way that it would say otherwise. So what I am reading is that her life is pure, and that she shows proper respect. Now, we'll come back and deal with some of these controversial statements, but let me just say from the outset, Peter is not saying that she is to put her husband in the place of Christ. Peter is not saying that she has to quit thinking on her own and simply, like a robot, agree with her husband even when he's wrong. It does not mean she should give up all of her efforts to influence and guide her husband. As a matter of fact, this is what this passage is teaching. This is how she can win over a husband when he is wrong. It does not mean that she has to give in to every demand of her husband. She does not submit because she is less intelligent or less competent. She is not afraid. She is not timid. But instead, she leads the family through these quiet characteristics of her personality. In fact, Peter says she wins. She's not a doormat. She's not run over. Peter, in fact, here is teaching her how she wins without even having to speak. Again, this is not a prohibition saying she cannot speak. It is saying much what I think was said of Francis of Assisi. Let me just say, I'm aware that the historians all debate whether Francis really said it or not. If Francis didn't say it, then you can give me credit for it. I'll take credit because it's a great statement, but somehow it's associated with Francis. Francis said, preach the gospel at all times, use words if necessary. That's one of those statements that seems to be a contradiction. But when you think about it, that illustrates the godly woman that Peter is talking about. She is preaching the gospel at all times through the purity and the respect that she shows in her own life and character. And yes, she can use words if necessary, but Peter says most of the time it's not necessary for her to use words because her own life has preached that loudly. As a matter of fact, Peter is making a pun. There really is a lot of humor in the scripture, much of which is lost in translation, but you can see this if I point it out to you. Peter says in verse 1, here is an ungodly man who does not believe the word, but he can be converted without a word. And you realize that is a play on words. It's the same word, logos, in both instances. And Peter is playing on words. The pagan husband who does not believe the word can be won over without a word. And so Peter is saying that you win a person over not by haranguing them. You win a person over not by browbeating them. But you win a person over by the influence of your life. This term, won over, is a term that Peter borrowed from the world of commerce. In other words, you're involved in a business transaction, and you're always trying to get the best deal possible. And so to win a business deal means you got a good deal. It means you improved yourself. You put yourself on more solid financial footing. And Peter borrows that term and says that it is her agenda not to simply be a doormat, not simply to live in this state of, well, there's nothing I can do about it, I'm just a woman. No, that's not what he's saying at all. He's saying, here's how she wins. And essentially, she is trying to influence her husband not to make a business deal, but to make a spiritual transaction, which we often refer to as conversion. She's trying to convert her husband, and in the process, she is trying to influence him to make such a good spiritual decision that he is in fact trading his pagan superstition for faith in Jesus Christ. And the implication is that when he does so, he has traded up. You know that terminology, don't you? If you come in with an old junker and you drive out with a brand new shiny car, we say we traded up. And what Peter is counseling this woman to do is to use the force of her own character to influence her husband to trade up, meaning that when he adopts her faith, he has left behind the old junker, he's driving out with the new car, and the whole family is the better because of it. And so that's the picture that Peter is giving here. Now, I believe that I'm preaching this morning to daughters of Sarah. And you know how to change your world at home. You know how to control your world in the classroom. And you know how to have influence in society. It's not how loud and shrill you are, but it's your prayer life. It's the force of your character and personality. And again, I want to import another cliche. You've heard it all your life, but it is true, and it fits just like the piece of a puzzle fits right here. It's that old statement that the hand that rocks the cradle, you remember it? The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And Peter properly understood is not teaching some kind of fatalism. I'm sorry you were born to be a woman and there's nothing you can do. No, he is saying use your character, use your personality to change the world. I believe I'm preaching to women who, in fact, are changing their own world. And again, I read this through the lens of my own experience and would tell you that my mother was such a person. We lost her 21 years ago, but her influence lives on. My sister and I decided that the best thing we could do to honor our mother was to post something on my sister's Facebook account. So far, we've had 100 responses. It's been overwhelming to both of us. 21 years ago, Mom left. But in a real sense, she never did leave because her influence is still living on. You see, let me put it in this perspective. We grew up in a college church that ran between 200 and 300 people. And girls would come to college away from home and away from mama for the first time. And they would look across the congregation for a role model. And what they told me in years that followed and what many of them are now posting on this Facebook account is that when these young girls were looking for a role model, they picked out my mother. She was a holy woman of prayer who knew how to dress classy and to act with poise and influence a whole generation of girls as their Sunday school teacher. I forgot all about that. I knew her from another side, But I forgot that she was teaching those girls, and many of them have posted things talking about her influence on them. Now, obviously, I was not in her girls' Sunday school class, but what I knew about my mother is that she had the proverbial eyes in the back of her head. Except they weren't really in the back of her head. She just had a direct line with God. And it wasn't that she saw out of the back of her head. It was that God was up in heaven. He saw everything, and he told her everything. Now, if I even was thinking about doing something wrong, she'd say, "Bub, we need to have a talk." Now, I'm not implying that I never did anything that was wrong. What I am implying is that I never did anything wrong that God didn't tell her I did. And we had those, and you know, with my dad, he would have been right in my face. But with my mother, it would have been that calm and gentle demeanor. She'd have never raised her voice, but I would have cried that I hurt her feelings. Do you understand? Now, let me just ask you, which one is the toughest? Well, if somebody gets in my face, I can get right back in theirs. But how do you deal with that kind of a gentle strength? I'll tell you what you do. You put it in reverse, and you start backing up, because here's somebody who has that ability. Now, I'm not trying to imply at all that my mother was better than yours. What I am saying is that collectively our mothers have had an influence that cannot be measured. And as a result, our churches and our families and even our world is a better place because of their example, because of their prayers. Now, the world still needs a whole lot more transformation. But Mother's Day is not simply a one time in a year, the tipping of our hat to assuage our conscience that we probably didn't show her enough respect. No, Mother's Day is a deliberate attempt as a church reading the Word of God to empower godly women to make the change that only they can change. Let me say this kindly, but let me say it without reservation. May God deliver us from any more promiscuous pop female singers. And may God deliver us from any immoral actresses who do not have the common sense to wear clothes. May God deliver us from those role models. And may God embolden wives and mothers like you to change the world. This is not simply a flower, and I love you, Mom, and I'll see you next Mother's Day. No, this passage is actually saying you have been given God-given gifts, talents, responsibilities, and character to make a difference. You are. We thank you for it. And in God's name, don't stop. Let's stand and look to Him for help. Father, after we men have blustered and blown our top and lost our cool and destroyed our influence, thank you for women who never lost any of the above and can help us find our balance and do so in such a gracious spirit that they actually make us better men in the process. Bless the women of this church and the ministries that you've given them, and help them succeed in being the role models that a current generation is desperately looking for and often not finding. May they not be reluctant to fill the gap and step up to the plate. And as they do so, may they know that you that they have the blessing of your word and the backing of the rest of us. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.